Commission on October 14th is now in session. And the first order of business is roll call. We'll start with Braulio.
Braulio's here.
And next, I guess.
Well, we don't have to be, but if there's any of these here.
Excellent, is here.
Brandigan is here.
Berman is here.
East is here.
Updike's here.
Yeah, everyone's here. Everybody is here. So, next order of business is the approval of the minutes of September 23rd, the work session meeting and the regular session.
Having read both of those sets of minutes and did not find any even minor corrections, thank you, Sherry, I move we approve both sets of minutes.
I'll second that.
I'm disappointed.
How many years have I sat here? I don't think that's ever happened.
All right. Okay. Well, she'll throw in some for you.
So, yeah.
I'll second it then.
No.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay, it's been seconded twice, so all in favor, saying aye. The meeting minutes have been approved. Next we have citizens' public comments. Forms available. In the council chambers, anyone who would like to address the planning commission on any matter not on the agenda would be given the opportunity after submitting the form. I got one. Each speaker should limit comments to 3 minutes. Normal disposition of these items would be at the next scheduled planning committee meetings. So, first one up is Dan McLaughlin, who wants to talk about Wilder, but that's on the agenda, so.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's on the agenda.
Yes.
So, well, when do we get to the
Wilder?
Okay. Are there any others?
I have not received any yet.
Anybody coming in yet?
Nope, nobody online.
Okay, new business. Yes, there's one new business.
Yes.
There is.
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Meet the city manager.
There we go.
Oh, there she is.
Is this not correct? I'm sorry.
It is. Is it not working?
Well, I mean, my little Wheelie has been around since.
Nina Vetter, your new city manager. I started in July here. Already been a busy 3 months. I just wanted to come and say hello and say a big thank you for your hard volunteer job that you have signed up for. Appreciate what you're doing and your service to the community, and thank you for being a part of the city and the great work that we're doing. So I just wanted to come and say thank you and also recognize we have a really fabulous community development department and some really dedicated staff that do great work day in and day out to keep the city functioning. So a big thank you to the staff. I'm happy to answer any questions, but again, really just wanted to be here tonight to introduce myself, say hi. Again, thank you for your time and commitment and your volunteer service and for being here. And I'm excited to see what the rest of the meeting looks like. And yeah, happy to answer any questions if you have any.
I don't exactly have a question, but I would like to second your comments about community development department. The staff reports we get are absolutely amazing in the level of detail and the accuracy. And we really appreciate it because it makes our job much, much easier. So thank you.
And at the last city council meeting, which was held last Monday, we had a proclamation. Derek has a nice framed proclamation from Mayor Kaplan.
That's correct. Yeah.
And maybe you can bring the next meeting so we can all.
Absolutely.
So we can all see the wonderful words that Mr. Mayor Kaplan put together for us. Okay. Anybody have any other questions?
Yeah.
Happy to be here on this rainy evening. Nice to meet you all.
Okay, so we have action items, public hearings. So, there's a new script that I need to read. Do we have anybody on Zoom?
No, we currently don't have anybody on Zoom. Thanks.
This is the time set for public hearings on file number 3-NCU-24 relating to the installation of a new cold box system at the Northwest Natural LNG facility. And file number 2-SUB-24, a tentative subdivision plat for a four lot townhouse development at 655 Northwest Nye Street. And file number 1PD-24/1-sub-24/2-TIA-24. Amendments to the Wilder Preliminary Development Plan and the Final Development Plan, Preliminary Subdivision Plat and Traffic Impact Analysis for the development of the Wilder remainder parcel on the east side of Southeast Herberton Street. This project consists of 56 single-family dwellings and 20 to 30 multi-family dwellings consisting of this statement applies to all hearings on the agenda. All testimony and evidence presented toward the requests being heard must be directed toward the relevant criteria in the Newport Comprehensive Plan, the Newport Municipal Code, or other land use regulations or standards which the speaker believes to apply to the decision. The failure of anyone to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the Planning Commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issues will preclude appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals, which is known as LUBA, LUBA, based on that issue. An issue which may be the basis for an appeal to LUBA shall be raised not later than the close of the record at or following this evidentiary hearing. Such issue shall be raised and accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the same decision makers and the parties an adequate opportunity to respond to each issue. The failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues related to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the city to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Prior to the conclusion of a hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. If such a request is made, then the hearing will be continued to a date certain and schedule set for submittal of additional testimony, a period for parties to respond to the new testimony, and a period whereby the applicant can provide final argument. At this time, I would ask commission members to disclose any actual or potential financial interest, bias, ex parte contacts, or site visits they may have related to any of these agenda items.
I have no financial interest or other interest in any of the three matters pending before the commission tonight.
No, I have none.
Quick drive-by on Nye Street.
None. Also a site visit on Nye.
If anyone present has an objection to the participation of any commissioner or the commission as a whole, please raise that objection now. Okay. The public hearings this evening are quasi-judicial in nature. The Planning Commission may, at the request of a participant or on its own accord, continue a hearing to a date certain to provide an opportunity for persons to present and rebut new evidence arguments or testimony related to the approval criteria. The hearings will proceed in the following order. Staff report, the applicant's testimony, persons in favor, persons opposed, the applicant's rebuttal. The record will then close for public testimony. The commission will deliberate, have questions, and come up with a verbal decision. A final order and findings will be prepared for consideration at the next meeting. If due to time constraints, staff and the applicant will be allocated up to 15 minutes for each presentation, and the applicant will also receive up to 5 minutes for final rebuttal. All others wishing to testify will be given 3 minutes each. Staff report.
Thank you. Derek Togos, Community Development Director. So I'm going to start here. We're starting with the cold box system at Northwest Natural. I'm going to go ahead and bring an image of this up on the screen. It's kind of a blow up of the area. I know you probably can't read it out there, but you've seen this. The cold box system is in here between the processing building and the tank. That's where they'll be doing the work. So you're looking at the cold box system is being upgraded. It's to more efficiently convert gas to liquid. This is the seventh non-conforming use alteration you've seen at this location since 2015, as Northwest Natural has taken a number of steps to modernize its processing facility at this location. The LNG facility is non-conforming in that it is situated within a water-dependent zone, which wouldn't normally allow that facility. However, that facility was constructed and commissioned before that more restrictive zoning was put in place. In fact, the facility was commissioned in 1977 and has been maintained and upgraded over that extended period of time until we get to now. The criteria for altering the non-conforming use or expanding it are found in the city's municipal code, Newport Municipal Code, or NMC. Chapter 14.32, it includes two components. First, you have to verify that it is, in fact, a lawful non-conforming use. And then once you've done that, then you need to take a look at what's proposed to ensure that it's not having a greater adverse impact relative to what the zoning is trying to accomplish out there. And there are a number of standards that frame what that means: comparative impacts on parking, comparative visual appearance, so on and so forth. In this case, this is a pretty, the new cold box system is pretty modest development. It's well concealed within the secure compound. This is a fenced secure compound. We found at staff level that all of the relevant approval criteria had been met. And so our recommendation to the Planning Commission would be to approve this application so that they can proceed with the improvement.
Questions of staff? Okay. Is the applicant here?
Yes.
You come on up and state your name and city you live in.
Mike Smith, Clackamas, Oregon, with Norwest Engineering representing Northwest Natural.
You okay?
Well, I couldn't put it any better than Derek did. I do want to thank you all for your time. I'm surprised I've been here seven times in the last 8 years. But, the step we have to go through every time is one look at this modernization at the facility.
Is it replacing the cold box, or is this I took it this is kind of a new thing.
It is a new process, but it'll be, it'll alleviate the demand on the existing cooling system.
You probably know that most likely you won't have to come before the Planning Commission anymore.
Oh no, I don't know that I'd shared that with you. There was a change in state law that And we're working through the amendments that as of next year, it will be a staff level review.
Will we?
We'll miss seeing you.
Yes, I'll miss seeing you.
You don't have to drive down from Clackamas.
I have a brief question. In our package, one of the, maybe you can pull it up there, there's a colored photo in the package. What exactly are we looking at? I'm assuming...
That's the new equipment.
What we're looking at.
Exactly.
Give us a sense of, how tall is that?
Oh, it's, well, the platform is about 7 feet off the ground. And the equipment is about 14 feet by 14 feet square. So the platform's at the top of the equipment. So not, this is like a lot less high than the stack that we were in here for last year.
Okay.
That was 30 feet. This is significantly under that.
Okay.
And really blocked by the existing process building. And no changes to operations or vehicles in or anything like that. It's just once it gets running, it's standard operating procedures for them.
Any questions? Are there any persons out there who'd like to testify in favor of this? Okay. Persons opposed? Not hearing any. Applicants rebuttal. The record is closed for public testimony, so we can deliberate on what we'd like to do. We'll start with John.
I'm comfortable with what's proposed and would be supportive. I concur with that.
Maybe. Oh, three of you.
Yeah.
I'm fine with your project and your proposal. You've been good in the past. Well, I don't know if it's been you, but that plant has been responsible. And so I assume, hopefully correctly, that you'll be fine by the city again.
High standards.
Well, historically, Northwest Natural, with their plant here in Newport, they've been good neighbors. This is behind the security fence. Probably not really going to be visible because it's going to be behind the existing structure. I have absolutely no problem with this.
And I don't have any questions for
Jim.
Operating procedure, basically. So, we would like to put forth a motion that we...
I'll be happy to. I move that the this commission approve case file 3NCU24 and authorize the construction of the cold box system to the Northwest Natural Plant here in Newport, consistent with the staff report.
I'll second that.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none? The motion has passed.
Thank you.
You always come in well prepared. Okay. And it serves you well.
Thank you.
And if you would tell the operation, as I say every time, and this sort of portrait of me the last time, we really appreciate the dog exercise area being available. It's a fabulous.
I pass it on to them every time, so they'll appreciate it. And I'll second also what the new city manager mentioned, what a great staff you have. We do this all over the country, and I really appreciate Derek and Sherry's attention and help as I get these things through. So, and thanks for your time, too.
You didn't just say that because it's the next time as administrator.
I wish I was that clever.
That game of flattery.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, staff report on the tentative subdivision plat for 40 Lock Townhouse.
Thank you. Derek Tobus again, Community Development. So before you, you have a tentative subdivision plat that would create four lots, three of which would have townhouses on it, and the fourth lot would be dedicated to common use, which would have the parking, storage, and trash receptacles. And so this property on 9th was, many of you may have known that as the Azar property. There had been two dilapidated structures on there for years that the city had engaged with that property owner for a long time, and eventually that led to the removal of those dilapidated structures. And then the property was picked up by CGC 6 LLC, which is Cal Blake Lock Litwer. They've been developing in 9H, and you've seen some of their projects on the ground out there. They've done the homes across from the Inn at 9 Beach. They've done the project kind of kitty corner on the opposite side of the street from what used to be the bead shop, which is now a boutique hotel. They've done a number of housing units there. They've done some duplexes on 3rd, another property on Brook that they're working on. So this is, consistent with kind of the portfolio work that they've been doing. Now for townhouse projects, in addition to your basic development standards, you have some design standards that this commission put in place a few years ago. Those are under chapter 14.31. And then there are transportation standards at 14.44. Vehicular circulation standards that apply at 14.46. And then land division standards at 14.48. There are a number of conditions, I think there are 11 conditions that we'd recommend for this. I guess I'll just touch on each of those just to make sure that they're captured in the record. I've had a chance to review them with the applicant. I believe that they're on board with those, but I have an opportunity to share their thoughts with you tonight. I'll not go through all the approval criteria, but the staff report includes each criterion and how they relate, and then also ties to the conditions of approval. So each of the townhouse units needs to be served by separate utilities. Those utilities would be installed and available before they record a final plat. So again, what's before you here is approval of a tentative subdivision plat that would allow that to be carved up into four lots. And then they would go about, constructing the townhouses, and they file a final plat towards the end. Normally you don't file a final plat until you've at least gotten through the foundation parts so you know where the common walls are. Otherwise you run the risk of platting the lots and then the homes getting built and the common walls are not in the right spot and you have to come back and replat. So that's how the process typically works. So once an approval is given, then that's a green light for them to proceed with development. But at the end of the day, a final plat will come in, and that's kind of our hook as is occupancy to make sure a number of these conditions of approval are met. So another one has to do with design standards, and it's the entry of each townhouse unit shall be recessed a minimum of 3 feet. There were a number of different townhouse design options that related to that condition. That's what the applicant selected. I included it as a condition of approval because the applicant hasn't prepared exterior elevations yet. They're not required to, and so this is a way to confirm and make sure that that's present and kind of uses as a check sheet. Minimum 15% of the area of each townhouse unit street-facing facade shall include windows or entrance doors. Again, another one to require design standard reflected there. They will need to provide copies of deed restrictions, covenants, and conditions, and a joint maintenance agreement for that shared parking area so that we can confirm and the city attorney can confirm that the covenants and conditions are sufficient to ensure that each of those townhouse unit owners, because they'll eventually be sold as individually owned properties, have sufficient rights to here for parking, use of storage, so on and so forth, and that there's a joint maintenance agreement in place to ensure that that fourth lot, the parking there is maintained and that each of the owners has obligations to maintain the parking. Condition 6 is in line with that same principle. There are some public improvements They'll be eliminating an old approach on the southeast corner that had served one of those two homes that was removed. That'll go away. This is a substandard width on the sidewalks, so they'll be, and they're very old. So they'll be replacing those with conforming sidewalks, 6 feet in width, with a 3 foot separation. And that's actually required per the TSP for a major collector, which is what NIA is. And so, and then they'll be replacing the approach up here, which is the access to the parking area, as it's a very old approach and substandard. So those are, that's really kind of the scope of public improvements that go along with this project. Stormwater runoff can be directed to the street. City engineer confirmed that all services are in place and available. But if you're driven by there, I think we have maybe 2 inches of exposed curb still, because the asphalt's been overlaid a number of times. The street's been overlaid, so there's not a whole lot of exposed curb. But to be able to extend the storm drainage out to the street, they'll have to put weed poles in there. That's going to require replacement of the curb. Utilities, other than city utilities, are available. The applicant provided confirmation of service letters to that effect. Then there are a couple of conditions that are required, where you know they have to provide our office and public works advance notice before they start work. And then there's a timeline within which the final plat needs to be submitted, which is 2 years. So. That said, I think the application was pretty thorough, and all of the approval criteria in the chapters listed have been met. Any questions you have? Yeah.
Attachment F is an aerial photograph showing the location. It's got a bunch of red lines on it that I can't figure out what they are. They look like contour lines, but they can't be because they vary on the highway if you go over to the right side of the page.
Okay.
What are those lines?
All right, let me just bring up the aerial. Just the zoning map.
There's no legend on the page.
All right, so I brought that up.
Yeah.
So which lines are we talking about?
All the little dotted.
Little dotted lines, those are contour intervals.
Topo.
Right? Topo. Yes. Topo.
Well, if you look at Coast Highway there, it doesn't drop down or raise up right there at that spot.
I mean, these are detailed contours. It's probably just showing the crowning of the road.
Oh, it's that sensitive?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that the fact that there's some concentric circles on the site, that doesn't really mean a big dip or a rise or...
No, just means that I think, you know, you had probably had a basement there or something, say, you know, with the two homes. I suspect that's the location of the southern house that was removed. So there may very well be some work they need to do in terms of just understanding what their soil conditions are before they design the foundations.
Okay, in your staff report, excuse me, give me a second to find it again.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reference to the 9th Street that I just need clarification on. The street is substandard, is the statement here. In what respects is the street substandard?
Okay, remember when we talk about a street section being substandard, it's the sidewalks, to be clear. It's not the street itself.
Oh.
Curb to curb, it meets the major collector standards. The sidewalk does not meet the major collector requirements.
Okay, yeah, it was a little unclear here, mm-hmm. That's what you were talking about. Okay, that's fine.
I don't know whether this is a question to you or the applicant, and mm-hmm. I hate to appear dense, but our agenda says we're going to talk about a tentative subdivision plat for 4-lot townhouse development. When I look at the exhibit E that we just looked at, it looked as though there's 3 townhouses and not 4. Am I missing something?
No, it's 3 townhouses, but it's 4 lots because the 4th lot contains all the common elements, including
parking. Okay, where you had looked like storage facility.
Yeah, storage sheds, parking, and that's where they'll be staging the trash receptacles.
Okay, four lots with three dwellings.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have the applicant's testimony? Come on up. Will you state your name and city you live in?
Good evening, my name is Todd Blake, I live in West Lynn, Oregon. And I don't have any particular statement, I'm happy to answer any questions, just by way of a very short introduction. My partner and I have been building workforce housing, as we like to call it, in primarily in Nye Beach. We've done 24 units so far, and we have another 11 in the pipeline. 105 Brook, as Derek kindly mentioned during his introduction and staff report. Everything we do, we sort of, in our residential projects, we're trying to provide housing to the what's commonly called the missing middle. So people in the middle income demographic. This project is, unlike our previous projects, it's not built to rent, it's built to sell. So we're looking to build these and then have family move in.
Three-story townhouses?
They're three-story, well, probably three-story. We have not finalized our architectural plans, but it'll probably be three stories. Three bedrooms, two bath.
Three stories, so one story underground? Is that the basement type stuff?
No, three stories above ground. But with, of course, underneath high limit.
If you're not asking for any variances or adjustments?
No, sir.
You won't be, I guess.
No, definitely not.
Will the units be sold or rented?
They should be sold, yeah.
And these will be market rate?
Correct.
Then I would direct my inquiry to your use of the word workforce housing. A very nebulous description in my experience sitting on this planning group. So what, as a developer, using monetary numbers, please explain what you describe as workforce housing.
Wasn't he talking about another project that he'd done? It was workforce. He wasn't referring to this.
I thought he was referring to this.
I'm happy to answer the question. Oh. Commonly, affordable housing, the adjective affordable, sometimes we say capital A affordable, is used to refer to projects that use some kind of government subsidy. There's a number of different subsidies out there, programs, grant programs. Workforce housing refers to non-subsidized housing, but that is not aimed at a high-end clientele or high-end purchasers or tenants. So we're, I think if you open up, it's fascinating reading, but the Department of Housing and Urban Development defines workforce housing as between, I believe it's 60 and 120% of the area median income.
Well, let's get more specific than that if we can, because it's a very large and broad swath. Mm-hmm. What does this project have to pencil out at in order to build? What will that developer have to get for those three units in order to make this financially viable for he or him?
We target somewhere under $300 a square foot. Hopefully significantly under that. So it depends on the finishes and whether there was a spike in lumber prices as we had several years ago during COVID, supply chains, that sort of thing. But projecting somewhere between $250 and $300 a square foot.
Okay, thank you.
And we're building 1,800 square foot units.
Yeah. That's helpful.
What is that? Can't do it in my head. What does that multiply out to, or a ballpark of a sales price? I'm asking.
It'll be, I think, $500,000 to $700,000 per unit. and it'll be, it'll depend on the market at the time.
Pretty obvious you're going to be at the high end of that range of
1,800 feet, 300,000 square foot, a little bit less than that 700. So.
Isn't this the property where there were some dilapidated homes and the city had a concern about them? Wasn't there some varmints running around underneath them and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's mentioned.
So the property is currently a vacant lot. It's essentially it's essentially flat, sandy lot.
You might want to continue moving south. There's some other homes there that could need updating.
I had a question about the storage units. Those are not heated or lit. Is that true?
We will probably have them lit, but they will not be heated. So the intention is to provide storage area for bicycle parking or whatever storage.
Does that imply you're going to run utilities from that lot too?
Yes, and we would probably need lighting, or we may need lighting for the lot.
Okay, so you separate utility hookups, so you'll be hooking up four separate.
Correct.
And then the one will be shared and apportioned among the rest.
Yes, sir. Would you consider a charging station?
Absolutely, yeah. We haven't, we haven't penciled that out yet, but that's, it's sort of a, I would call it a no-brainer in terms of where the...
This property is subject to the requirements for infrastructure for charging, right?
No, it's not.
Oh.
No, those apply to that would be the House Bill 2180 that that impacts building codes, and that applies to multifamily, five units or more, or commercial projects.
Okay. So when you consider at least putting the ability, at least just roughing in some kind of electrical there to where you would give the homeowners an option if they were driving electric cars that they could set up their own individual charging station?
Yes. That's when I say it's the only reason we wouldn't put in a specific charger is because the homeowner may prefer a certain specific type or brand of charger. So we'd absolutely have it pre-plumbed, if you will.
Did have Tesla come in and put a supercharger in for it.
Sure. Be the most popular.
It seemed pretty busy up there by the Safeway. Other questions? Okay. Anybody who would like to testify who's in favor of this? I'm not seeing any. Any persons opposed? I don't see anybody. Obviously, we will not have a rebuttal. So the record is now closed for testimony, and we can begin the commission deliberation. And we'll start with Gary.
I am thrilled to see something being done with these lots. We definitely need the housing. They could be fit. And I'm in for this process.
Okay, Mr. John.
Great to see infill wherever possible, so that's terrific. Derek, you would then be reviewing, from a design standpoint, the final height,
yep,
bulk, and that's all administrative, right?
Right, it's all clear and objective, Steve.
Okay. Yeah, I'm supportive.
I agree. It's well done, well presented. I would have liked to have seen elevation views, Derek will review those when they come in. And I think there's enough conditions on here that if they're all met, everything will be just the way it should be. So I'm going to look at
it. Mr. Mishkin,
met Mr. Me again.
Ms. Henry?
It seems to be a well-thought-out project. We all appreciate that. And as John mentioned, in Bill and housing is so important here. The only thing missing in my mind, and it doesn't impact my vote, is that there wasn't enough of that capital A affordable housing. Market rate, lots of people like to build that. They say they can't build affordable. We got to find somebody that can build affordable. And that comes down to guys who build homes, development companies. So anyway, nicely done. And it is a good solution for what was an eyesore. Don't get more property.
This is waiting.
But, you know, it's ironic we sit here in the middle of October 2024 and suddenly workforce housing is half a million, three quarters of a million, you know, with inflation. This is really, it is, and the cost of materials, the cost of labor, all the rest of it. It seems like we're putting a nice project in an area that needs some maybe a little bit more development, especially. Again, heading towards the south on that same side of the street. That being said, we want to take the risk. If they're willing to comply with the conditions set forth in the staff report, I can support this point.
You okay? I had a question. I assume that we're going to put in lighting that's dark sky.
Thank you.
Why did Mike?
Dark skies, please. You know, dark skies is all illuminating light or, you know, security light is downward.
Oh.
You know, so we don't want the astronauts to see us.
So I assume we're going to do that, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
So we talked about he's going to EV.
He's considering that. I think that's the one. Lights in the storage unit.
They've got the right idea. They've got follow through. We'd be happy.
Okay. Since
you answered my question, on behalf of Commissioner Chino, I also would vote to approve. So, do we have a motion?
I would make it, but I got to find the number first. Then I have to make it larger.
Yeah. I got it.
It's 2-sub-24.
Okay. Go ahead.
Help yourself. I move that we accept and approve
2-sub-24.
2-sub-24. I suggest we.
I will second that also.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion is approved. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Need help?
Bill, safely.
Thank you. Okay, next up is, I have to repeat this, file number 1-EB-24/2-DB-24/1-SUV-24/2-TIA-24. Okay, so staff report on the Wilder preliminary subdivision.
Thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development Director. That's a mouthful. It's a number of bundled applications. The first one I'd like to speak to is the amendment to the preliminary development plan. So Wilder is a very large plan development, but only a portion of it, a small portion, frankly, has been developed to this point. And the initial phase of Wilder involved about 65 acres of the same extent to the city. And a portion of that is what you see up there in terms of the existing development. Plan developments, by their nature, they're designed to allow for some alternative development standards than what is typical to achieve specific objectives. In this case, in Wilder, it's a walkable community, bikeable community. It's got more density than you would typically see in other parts of the city. That includes kind of smaller, even on the single-family sites, a number of smaller lots along with small cottages on those lots. So the first piece of this is the preliminary development plan. There were three things that they modified, and this applies to all of Wilder, not just the remainder parcel. One has to do with doing away with their accessory dwelling unit rules. They would rather follow the city's accessory dwelling unit rules, the ones that they have in the books. And that's really more a function of when they put their accessory dwelling unit rules together. They were ahead of where the state was at the time, and the state as well, because the state then later put in place some parameters on how local governments were to handle accessory dwelling units. And we adopted those parameters like Popery of other cities did, because you had to. And it's been working reasonably well. And so they want to scrap what they had put together and we'll just go with the city's accessory dwelling unit rules. The other has to do with fences. They want to go with a 42-inch fence height in their front yards and sight distance triangles, except for those that where your streets intersect with Harborton. So they want to hold the city's vision clearance requirements where those streets intersect with Harborton, and that's a collector roadway that carries more traffic. The roadways interior to a number of these Wilder phases are narrower, but they also, with that narrowness, restrict vehicle speeds. And so we didn't have any really concerns with the 42-inch height as they proposed. And then the last has to do with at what point in time Harborton needs to be extended to the south. Right now it terminates just south of the intersection with College Way. They have that property there, the dog park property eventually will get developed. Now that property you can access off College Way. And so they have asked that they not be compelled to extend Harborton if they do that. Which is fine, because if they're going to do future phases, they're going to have to extend Harborton with future phase. And typically our approach on that kind of thing is that if you're creating a demand for it, you need to build it. So we didn't have an issue with those three changes, but I just wanted to call those out because those do apply to the entire Wilder project, both what's existing and what's proposed here. So the balance of this, we have final development plan for the Wilder, what we call remainder parcel, that portion that's east of Harborton. we have a preliminary subdivision plat and then a traffic impact analysis. The criteria that were impacted, in addition to the basic development standards, you have the criteria for final development plans under what's 1435-100. The preliminary development plans under 1435-020-030-070, and then the same kind of land division standards we were talking about with the previous application. You have the 1444 traffic transportation standards, you have the 1446 vehicle circulation requirements, 1448 land division, and the traffic impact analysis was 1445. So with this type of an application and the substantial amount of approval criteria, and I do want to give a shout out to Dal, the applicant did a wonderful job organizing their application. It wasn't necessary for me to duplicate what they were already did with their exhibits. They were very well organized. And so what I did was spend my time going through that and then putting together a number of conditions that address things that they need to follow up on. There's 20 of them total here. One, which I'll be talking about in a little bit, has to do with the maximum building height that's permissible for the multifamily portion of the project. And so I'm gonna kind of move forward here and begin to kind of illustrate parts of this project. So for this remainder phase, you see Harborton's down here on the bottom of the page. And then you'll see 43rd Street will extend across. And most of what you have on the west side of the project, I guess it'd be kind of on the north, you'll have the single family. And then when you get to the south side of the project, you have the multifamily. And here's where 46th Street would come across. So 46th and 43rd are what they call hillside streets. And if you may recall, with Wilder, we have what we call a kit of parts. And that kit of parts is a custom set of standards for this plan development, which includes a custom set of street standards that have been previously approved. They are not requesting any modifications to the previously approved street standards. These are all street standards the city's already approved. The hillside one allows parking on one side. It's got a 27-foot cross-section. The urban alleys that you saw in there are 20 feet. So one of the issues that we had to kind of sort through and make sure was adequately addressed is adequacy of fire access, given the way they set this up and given the turn radius, the radiuses on the intersection. So what you had added to the packet were the fire truck turn radius diagrams that they've prepared in the past to show how our fire trucks can navigate. Now, these have been reviewed by our fire department. And up to a maximum building height of 35 feet, if a fire engine responds, it's going to be responding. It's a first response vehicle, which is smaller. If you go over 35 feet in height, that has to be served by the ladder truck, which has a different turn radius. It's a little more challenging, bigger vehicles. So it can't navigate the urban alley area at all. But their standard fire engine can do it. And because that area is an area where you're going to see single family homes and they're not going to go over 35 feet in height, that's fine. What modification that the applicant had asked for was to conditional approval item G, where we had said the peak height of any structure within the final development plan shall not exceed 35 feet. Our assumption at that time was that the applicant would be constructing fourplexes very similar to what exists right now on the other side of Harborton, which are not taller than 35 feet. But after they had a chance, the applicant had a chance to review the staff report, they said, hey, look, we want the flexibility on this multifamily area to be able to go up to 45 feet in height. And what we can do is we can show you that in this area where you have this 46th Street to the internal parking lot for the multifamily back to Harborton, they were able to show that the ladder truck can navigate that area. And the fire chief was okay with that. So I provided you an alternative condition of approval, number G, that says the peak height of any structure on lots 1 through 56 of the final development plan shall not exceed 35 feet. That covers all of the single family stuff, but that then leaves a multifamily with an option of 45-foot maximum building height, which is the maximum building height for multifamily in this plan development. That's not a new maximum building height.
That
would happen
at Windhaven?
Windhaven's not in this one, but that's what applied to OSU student housing.
Oh, true, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got a 45-foot already in the plan development, 45-foot maximum height for multifamily, and they just wanted to be able to utilize that for this area right here. And because the ladder truck can navigate through here and serve that, fire chief was okay with the 45-foot for that multifamily.
How'd the applicant feel about that?
That's what they asked for, so they'll be running that. And you can talk to them about this stuff. I'll just kind of run through the conditions of approval here real quick. One of them, which is common for when you see a subdivision layout like this, it's you're bound to do what you've submitted these final development plans are detailed. So there may be some minor modifications and turn radiuses and whatnot, but we would expect to see that when they come in to actually do the development and put the streets in, that they all look consistent with what you're looking at in terms of their application. You may recall that, and I'm pointing this out because we added these in fairly recently, and this has to do with trash enclosures. If the multifamily, and there's a good chance this multifamily is going to be providing accessible units on a street grade. That means if you have accessible units at street grade, then you have to provide an accessible path to the trash enclosures for those that are disabled. And that's what that condition relates to. Condition item D gets at ingress and egress to proposed lot 37. They provided turn radius on this. It's pretty tight. This is the only part of the design that, both myself and our fire chief struggle with a little bit. And that's this lot right here. For a vehicle to get out of that, these are illustrating driveway locations, these gray hatches we're looking at, okay? So for a vehicle to get down here, in here, and then you saw the final turn radius diagram was added to your package, you saw that. That car, and that's just a standard passenger car, goes almost into the multi-use path. It goes right up to the boundary there. That's extremely tight. So there are a couple things in here. There was a condition that they have to put in bollards or something equivalent to prevent vehicles from going from this urban alley onto the multi-use path that they'll be building. Multi-use paths are not designed for vehicle loads. And that would be a conflict at that location. And so that's why, and I cited there's standards that relate to that. And I cited the code with each of these conditions. What we want to make sure is that anybody who purchases and builds on lot 37 can reasonably get their car into the driveway and out without having to back onto this multi-use path or back up this street to this intersection before they can turn around. So we just want to be careful with that. Applicant may have some additional comments on that.
So when I looked at that, I thought the issue is broader than just lot 37, though.
Mm-hmm.
Any visitor, any of that area, they get trapped in that dead end. I mean, I've almost never been a fan of a no way out situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 37 is a tight turning radius, but if I'm visiting two doors down,
mm-hmm.
and I'm facing toward that multi-use path, I don't have a way to get out other than going into my 37's driveway, which hopefully doesn't have a car in it. Otherwise,
right.
I have to back out. So how do you reconcile that?
You know, that's a fair question. Typically, when we look at turnarounds, it has less to do with passenger vehicles and more to do with emergency vehicle turnarounds. That's usually when we have some triggering standards for that, but this is not long enough in terms of its dead-end length to trigger an emergency vehicle turnaround. And frankly, Rob told me, if they had to respond to something on any of these lots, they're going to be responding from the larger public road on this side. It's a fair question to ask the applicant. That's the one that we had some discomfort with. It would be nice to see some sort of turnaround at the end of that, because I think it's just difficult to navigate. And your point's fair. It's not just lot 37, although that's the one that gives the most concern, because how proximate it is to the multi-use path. I don't want to belabor this too much. This was the one small, and it's a fairly minor thing that can be addressed. If the bulk of this works fairly well. And, this is one of those circumstances where, given our staffing and engineering, we actually had we hired HHPR, a private firm, to do the review for engineering. We have a contract with them for that purpose. And so we asked them to do a fatal flaw analysis. They didn't find any fatal flaws, but they did identify a number of pertinent issues that we're asking the applicant to address. They relate to the placement of mailboxes, which were depicted on some of those, so that they don't obstruct sidewalks and and accessible routes, so you have to, so they'll have to route the sidewalks around them, or in some cases move them. There's some ramps that need to be that will need to be installed for ADA compliance, both across Harberton at the new street intersections at 43rd and 46th, but also internal property where required. So those are items that we picked up. So the mailboxes were under item E, bollards, which had to do with that pathway concern I expressed, that was item F. We already talked about the height issue, which was item G. I want to make sure I hit all these. ADA compliant crossings was item H. Item I, and we this condition is consistent with the condition the commission imposed on OSU for their trail work. There's a recognition that they may need to alter the alignment somewhat based on terrain considerations, and this gives them the flexibility to do that as long as the pathways are built to the width and the parameters that are part of the kit parts. So if they've got them move it one way or the other a little bit, that condition gives them that flexibility. Item J points out that they need to construct their improvements in accordance with the Care Parks, which has the design standards. Unless a city engineer authorizes an alternative approach, that would be a technical type authorization based on issues on the ground. Then that they have to obtain a right-of-way permit for that work. Item K gets at addressing comments from HHPR, which were included in your packet. Item L gets at placement of fire hydrants. The fire chief had a chance to take a look at them. HHPR had placed them based on the review, and the fire chief was comfortable with the locations of those. So they'll need to install hydrants in those locations. M gets at that question about the extension of Southeast Harberton need not occur with the development of that lot, the dog park lot next to the College Way. Item N is a duplicate of it, since it's a land division requirement in terms of requiring notice to the city before they start doing excavation. And then items O onward are technical land division type conditions that relate to how they approach installation of the utilities, providing as-builts to the city after the utilities have been installed, dealing with avoiding disturbing survey monuments, established survey monuments, and protecting survey monuments when they're done. They'll be putting in new survey monuments, and at certain areas, those monuments have to be protected in monument boxes. And then, like the last lander you just looked at, final plats are to be submitted within 2 years. There are processes, administrative processes, to extend that, but that's the standard requirement. So, you have any questions of staff?
Yeah, are there any requirements for subdivision provision for visitor parking?
Oh no, not explicitly. There is on street.
If I go visit somebody who's in lot 37.
Well, right now they're showing the parking areas with those hatches. Did you see those up here? Those were on street. On street parking is allowed on one side for on these hillside streets, and so they're showing where that parking would occur. So a lot of it would be down through here.
Through where? Sorry. Lost
sorry, see where my current
the hatch marks.
I'm gonna go around in a circle. Okay. See these hatch marks?
Yeah,
that's all on street parking.
Okay, so if I'm visiting any either 37 or any 49, 50, 51, where am I supposed to park?
If you're visiting folks that on these lots, on these urban alley lots, you would be parking out on the hillside streets and walking in.
Okay.
But see, that's not out of the norm of what you already have in Wilder. Wilder is not really it's a walkable community emphasis. So when you're looking at, I mean, the premise on a lot of this stuff, and they can speak to this to you as well, would be you know, when you have these small cottages on small lots, remember the last, what, 26 lot subdivision we did over on the other side, and you're talking about 2,500 to 3,000 square foot lots with you know, buildings that are 1,000 square feet. I mean, you're, you know, the expectation isn't that, you know, you've got three cars coming with that. You know, it's going to be a more of a walkable, less of a you know, auto-dominated type environment.
I just worry that people are going to park on those alleys, and then come time for an ambulance to get through there, they aren't going to be able to. And that it just seems like, at a minimum, ambulance accessibility ought to be a priority. But there's no way to enforce that parking there. I mean, it's particularly if you have disabled people. If my mother-in-law wants to come and visit and she's in a wheelchair, am I going to park a quarter mile away or 100 yards away? And
or you might just drive up there, drop off, you know, your mom, and then go park the vehicle. I mean, we run into that in a lot of different environments where, you know, you've got to... you don't have a potpourri of parking.
But if the off-street parking is not only there along the southerly edge, it's also some along the northerly edge. So Derek, my question was, I think you mentioned that you retained another planning group to look at this. I mean, you mentioned in your staff report the HHPR.
Not planning group, engineering.
Engineering group, okay.
Yeah, they looked at the civil, the utilities, they looked at the street layout, they looked at the sidewalks.
So you're bringing some additional expertise.
Right, because the city has limited staff in engineering right now to perform that.
And who paid for the experts to come in and help you? Did the applicant do that? Or part of the city budget?
That's part of the city budget. Okay. Now, the applicant paid their filing fees, which is their contribution, but that's part of the city budget.
Derek, could I read in here somewhere that Wilder wanted to give some land to the city?
Yes, there are three tracks. Thank you. There are three tracks. There's this one here, tracks A, you see tracks A and B here, between Harborton and what they'll be developing. That's where they're putting the multi-use path here. That's gonna be dedicated to the public. And then the other one is...
It says city-owned.
Right here.
Exactly.
This is one they'll be dedicating as well. They kind of hatched out where a future small pocket park could be. This is actually commercially zoned under the plan, but they would dedicate it to the public. It's pretty constrained. You've got this is where you've got that overhead utility easement shooting through here, the high voltage easement, central Lincoln PUD, and you've got this drainage down here, which is depicted here as wetland down through here. So
will this require maintenance?
No, we've not active maintenance.
I'm curious about the cost to the city.
It's part of
adopting this property.
Right. It's a fair question. It's part of the nature trail system that was planned for Wilder. We've already accepted a number of properties with the earlier phases that they're intended to be natural. So we may go in there and do some trail maintenance from time to time, but we're not going to be knocking down brush and things of that nature.
Well, and more to the point, the development of a more user-friendly or wider groups that would use that property for playgrounds and picnics and stuff like that. I have no idea. That's why I asked the questions. What's the city going to do with it? Because if the Wilder is giving this to the city, then it costs the residents of the city money to maintain those things or to build them out. Is that a good return for the city and the taxpayer? That's where I'm going with this.
So Wilder's going to be installing the pathway on those first two tracks. This one's going to be left basically open. We've had some discussions with them about obtaining a larger active youth park site in a different location. Our park and recs director, has some concerns about doing too many small pocket parks as we continue to add quite a few housing units. It'd be nice to get something in the southern part of Newport that's a larger, more active type recreational facility. But there are other properties where there's some potential for that. And, if we're able to work that out with Wilder or another property owner, because they're not the only ones with property that might be suitable, the city always has the ability to, I'm gonna use Wilder as an example, if they were to discount or gift property, then we would have to account for that, and then we would do that as an SDC discount on their parks SDC. So there's ways to balance some of that out. At this point, I think this one would probably stay more or less open space until our Parks and Rec director and department figures out exactly how they want to tackle the next park site down in South Beach.
So, what's in it for Wilder to give the city those properties?
They don't have to deal with it. I mean, one of the challenges...
It doesn't take any dealing with.
It doesn't, but one of the challenges you run into, public ownership is kind of passive over time. If you create homeowners that have associations that have to manage this, and if they don't pay their taxes, all of a sudden it goes on a foreclosure. We've seen a number of those around the city where HOA were to maintain certain properties or own certain properties, and then the HOA over time, and I'm not saying this will happen in Wilder, but it has happened in different planned developments where the HOAs kind of dissolve, go away. They're not actively managed anymore by the people that are living there. The organizational structure gets shaky, and all of a sudden taxes don't get paid on these, and they end up getting into a tax foreclosure. And so you have that kind of weird stuff. If you dedicate it to the public, which is really the more traditional approach with open space, was to, part of these types of developments was to dedicate it to the public. It's under public ownership, and there's some assurance it's going to stay as it's supposed to, and as it's outlined in the plan.
Is Wilder currently, or even in the future, is it a kid-rich environment?
I think I better let them speak to that one.
I have no idea. I spent time there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what kind of people lived there.
It seemed like young.
That's a terrible way to say that.
College folks. I didn't necessarily see small children, but they were young folks, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, when I grew up, I was a free ranger kid, mm-hmm. And out there, that'd be free ranging. Yeah, what would happen? But that's a great place to grow up if you're free ranging, mm-hmm. But
On the city trails.
Parents don't seem to do that anymore. They lock their kids down and send them to the video box, kind of thing. So I'm just wondering what to do with that land out there that the city's now going up on. And you might want a place for kids to play.
Okay. One more question about the city on the track.
Yeah. Grass.
Is the disc golf course on any of that? I'm talking about track C.
Yeah, to the extent that the applicant can speak to this, to the extent that the disc, I don't recall what it is. They may be close to it, but they can speak to that. The disc course kind of morphs and grows and evolves around the development. I mean, that's the point. It's something that's a wonderful amenity that they've allowed to have out there on these properties that are going to eventually develop, that they then shift and move it away when they need to develop.
Okay.
I know that there's the caveat there that says the multifamily area is conceptual, but it seems as though there's more parking spaces there than there are actual dwelling units for visitors. Am I misreading?
Well, if they end up going with again, this is showing kind of those conceptual footprints, but if they end up going with 30 units, I mean, that's actually a fair amount of parking that would be required with that.
Okay. Applicant's testimony is Steve.
Welcome back.
It's been a few years. I think I promised we'd stay away for a while. I'm Bonnie Serkin, 2712 Southeast 20th Ave, Portland. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Landways, Inc., which is the master developer of Wilder. I am so excited to talk with you because everything you asked for in the previous hearing and everything you've been asking now is what I love to talk about, even when people don't necessarily want to hear me. First, I want to join in the accolades for Derek and Sherry. They've been just wonderful. They've grown up with Wilder, or maybe Wilder's grown up with them, and it's been a long time. If you've been to the community college lately, you've seen how Wilder has grown. 66 homes, 28 apartments, a commercial building with a barbecue restaurant, and you know, when we did that part on the west side of Harborton, it was aspirational, hypothetical, and now I can answer most of your questions because it's worked. We have proof that our aspirations can actually be enacted and they're succeeding. We've created a community. People care for each other. Those front porches on all of the houses get used and people know each other. They take each other to the hospital, they have potlucks. They really care, and it's been wonderful. It's a community with children. Yes, the school bus, when the first time I saw the school bus going through, I knew that we'd done something really good. If you just walk around like I did this afternoon, you'll see that there are tricycles on the front porches. The latest batch of houses that were built, we gave the building, as master developer, we create the lots. We install the infrastructure, someone else builds the houses. We gave a builder 3 years to build out 26 homes. It took them 1 year, and they were mostly pre-sold. And people were so excited to have a variety of homes that they could choose, but particularly the 1,000 square feet or less, what we call micro cottages, that are really more narrow lot homes. It's middle housing. It's what this state is all about now. It's what people can get into and they can afford. I'm told that first-time home buyers have been able to buy these, and not just young first-time home buyers. People who've been saving for years, couples who've been saving for years, are buying these homes. People with children, retirees. It's a very wide demographic all over Wilder now, and it's just very exciting to see. What you're seeing up here on the screen, what's the subject of our application? It's more of the same. We're going to do 26 more of those narrow lot homes because it's what people are clamoring for. There were also a number of people who were clamoring for slightly larger homes and some people who really wanted to spread out a little bit more. So there's going to be the complete variety that there's been on the west side of the street. And I don't know how long it will take to build out, but the builder who's most likely to build wants to do it all at once, didn't want to do it in phases, like on the west side, because Wilder has been such a success. I would love to answer what I think the questions were that you asked Derek that he spoke about, but I'm happy to let you ask me what you'd like to hear from me rather than having you talk about parking and open spaces. If you'd rather, I can just assume that you're going to ask me those questions and talk about those things right now. Talk about me. Parking. So those, you know, when I first looked at this, I was thinking, wait a minute, it's backwards, but all those crosshatch things are the driveways. And those are alley-loaded driveways. People don't park in those driveways. They go to the fronts of the houses if they're visiting, and that's where the parking is for them. For most of those alleys, the driveways are so close together, you can't actually get cars there. But the other thing that happens in Wilder is under our CCRs, because we try to be pedestrian-oriented, we have, first, the city requires two off-street parking spaces, so each home has at least two off-street parking spaces. We require that they park in the garage and that any extra car parks in the driveway to keep them off the street. If they only have one car, we ask that they have their guests park in their driveway. And people have been remarkably compliant with something like that. They're not really used to ratting out their neighbors, but there was just one for the whole time that we've been around that was parking in a way that jutted out into the street, and we heard about it. So we tried to address parking that way. The open spaces have succeeded in phase one. We have that wonderful trail that goes down the hill toward Mike Miller Park. It's popular. Every time I stand there, it doesn't matter what the weather is, people are climbing up the hill or down the hill to go through Mike Miller from our playground. The swale that parallels Harberton Street is another open space. It gets mowed once a year, so there's no fire danger. But otherwise, it's really low maintenance. The park, playground park, and a little bit of open space that's right near it sometimes looks a little, you know, rough around the edges. The Wilder owners get together and they go out and they mow and they trim. There are a lot of gardeners there, and it's part of the community. But the other thing that it does to have the dedication of the open spaces is that it keeps the Wilder HOA fees low. They're about $4 a month, which is lower than any HOA that I've ever heard of. And one of the things we wanted to do when building Wilder was to make it, and here's the word that I used, started using, was attainable, attainably priced, and others have picked up on that. Don't say affordable anymore. I don't say workforce because it's amorphous, right? But attainably priced is something that two working parents can actually
workforce
get into. Or even, you know, one stay at home working. It works. Attainable, I think, sort of gets the point across. But part of that attainability is to keep the operating costs low throughout the ownership. And that's one of the things that the dedicating the space does. There's not common area basically in Wilder. There's a cottage cluster in the first phase that does have a little green space and shared garages and parking. But those are the only common area fees, and it's just worked so successfully for us that we would like to keep that up.
Okay, questions of the...
I have so gosh damn many questions that I don't want to monopolize everybody's time. But in phase one, if somebody is not compliant with the parking protocol, is there an enforcement mechanism?
I'm the president of the HOA.
Okay. That was question number one. Number two, once you're approved, are we now eliminating the disc golf course?
Can I answer you first?
Pardon?
The disc golf course has already moved.
Oh, it's already moved. Okay.
Yeah, because they could see, 5 years ago, they wanted to improve their tee boxes, they wanted to pour concrete, and they knew we were going to be developing there eventually, mm-hmm. So they didn't want to have to tear them up after just 5 years. So we let them move onto other property that one of our sister corporations owns in the forest. It's in the county, it's not in city limits, but we license it to the city, and the city licenses it to the group that runs.
So final thing, you were here earlier when the folks were talking about their townhouses, and there was that brief discussion between affordability and workforce housing. You've got multifamily, I take those would be rentals?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not building them, but I understand that anyone who would want to build those would.
Then you have your narrow lots, and then moving to the other side, there's larger lots. Do you have a range for both the smaller lots or the narrow lots and the larger lots in terms of the ultimate sale price?
Because we're not builders, I don't get to set the sale price.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you what the previous 26 homes that were just built went for, and what they might have gone for 5 years ago if they're, you know, been able to build. The pricing for the narrow lot homes was in the low 300,000s, which is why people were
able to get
into them.
That was 300 5 years ago.
No, it is. The sales price most recently was 5 years ago, we could have worked with the land trust and the prices would have been, I think, below $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
We had actually had talks with them and it just never materialized because COVID and prices kept going. It was complicated, but we were very sad to lose that opportunity, and now the pricing in the market is just beyond what the state's LIFT funding can accomplish, and so that was foreclosed. We also tried to work with Samaritan House on apartments in about 2016, 2017. We had a contract with them to purchase a couple of acres from us and build what I think they would have called transitional housing, something other than the family shelters that they've got now. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of years of trying to put it together, they realized their highest and best use just wasn't that. And so we lost the opportunity to do what was truly affordable housing, subsidized housing. So there are also, you know, I always say that we are growing organically depending on what the demand is. And we're always willing to work with people who have ideas about what should be there. Thus, the narrow lot houses that have been so successful. You asked me question number one, and now I can't even remember what it was anymore.
Variety. He spoke to, would there be variety on a small lot?
Oh, yeah. Our houses are not so big. The biggest house in the world right now is maybe 2,100 square feet. And that's on a lot that's about a quarter of an acre. Someone who wanted to spread out, but who had grandkids and had to build an extra couple hundred square feet to just, you know, put the grandkids somewhere. By and large, the homes are 1,300 to 1,500 square feet, which almost counts as middle housing anyway. But we, you know, it's kind of the next move up of village housing is what we call it, bungalows, and you know, it's worked. Really, really messy. Very small yards, just enough to let the dog out at midnight if you go to France.
Are these single story?
Sorry?
Single story?
Some are single story, some are two story. Yeah. The smaller ones, the narrow lot ones, are very, very hard to make single story because the lots are so tiny and you've got to get a garage in back and you have to have the front porch and it just doesn't leave very much of a footprint to have a one story. So we've got 4 one-story micro cottages, we call them. Not the best, most popular layouts. And I'm hoping that maybe for this next 26 that are going to be in this phase, there's a way to make it work so that there's at least one bedroom on the ground floor. Just, it was very, very hard to shoehorn everything in there.
Price per square foot, around 200 square foot?
I'm not sure because I'm not the builder. I'm so sorry. I can get that information and provide that.
Do you, there seemed to be, I hope I'm right on this, that you were asking for fences that could go to 72 inches high. Did I read that correctly?
That's just on the...
Three sides and 42 acres on the front?
42 would be on the front.
42 on the front, but the other three sides could be 6 foot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you foresee 6 foot fences surrounding each and every one of these lots?
No. Some people have actually done six foot fences. We require them to be good neighbor fences on Cedar. They've got a hot tub outside and they don't want people to see them. It hasn't happened very much. Some people did beautiful bamboo fences. They're on the boundary in the cottage cluster, so there's nothing behind them but the city's path, and they really wanted to be sheltered from people walking by the path. And they're gorgeous things. I don't know how they commissioned them. We let people have variety. Sometimes they feel they need 6 feet around a patio where they're doing entertaining and they haven't invited the community or associated with just the things that I've heard about that ask for 6 feet.
Bob? Yeah, I see on here a small wetland that you're going to fill in. What are you doing for mitigation or to offset the impact of that?
It's tiny. And I think we're going to let whoever does the building actually apply for that. We've just updated our wetland mapping and it's just been accepted by the state.
The fill permit will, it could go in at any time, but I'm told that it doesn't actually require physical mitigation, just payment of a fee, because it's just really small.
And that's all under the control of the state, then?
Sorry?
That's state permits for all that?
Yep. DSL and Pacific Habitat Services does that application for us, or for who ultimately does the building, and they have it in the works, but haven't filed it.
Have you had an opportunity to review the staff report?
Oh, yes.
And there's several A through H or A through J conditions. Do you have any comment on the proposed conditions imposed by the staff?
Very reasonable, expected, very easy for us to comply with before mm-hmm. permitting. The only one that we really had the problem with was the 35 feet for the multifamily, where we'd like it to go to 45 feet if it's going to be three stories. And, you know, at this point in this town, adding 10 or 13 extra units to multifamily just seems like a really good thing to do if you can do it in that footprint. So that's the only condition that we have a problem.
So you were comfortable with the total 35-foot limitations on lots 1 through 56?
Oh, yes. Everything in across Harberton.
That's your alternative language?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
No.
So you're okay with the alternative language?
Very much so.
Thank you.
I should introduce Peter Anderson, who's with Dow, the engineers. He's the land use planner there. And if you have any technical engineering or land use planning questions, you would be happy.
You have a hard act to follow.
I know, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bonnie. Yes, we don't.
We're not that technical.
Okay. Thank you, Bonnie, and
thank you, Charlie.
Okay. Now, if we have people in favor, if they would like to testify, raise your hand and come on up.
Then you have to draw.
You have.
Okay. I don't see any in favor. Persons opposed or other. Can come up, so I do have one, Dan McLaughlin.
Yes.
Now, if you could state your name and what city you live in.
Sure. My name is Dan McLaughlin. I live at 725 Southeast 43rd Street. That's up in Wilder. I have two issues I'd like to talk about. One is the fence issue. I'd like the existing fences in Wilder be grandfathered. If they already have been approved and built, I don't see any reason why they need to be reapproved or recalibrated or something like that. That would be my first request. The second deals with the traffic impact analysis. We went through this earlier when we talked about the church. Harberton is basically dead-ended into the college. And so if there's an emergency, there's a lot of people coming down that hill. And last time, Derek pointed out that he was hopeful that increased population pressure would get a traffic signal from the state. I would respond that a traffic signal with an extra 100 or 200 people trying to come down the hill really wouldn't do a lot. So I kind of have a feeling that we're kicking the increased density up the hill, sort of down the road, and I'd just like a discussion/recognition that we're going to need another way off the hill in the event of a natural emergency. And those are my 2 points. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Would have anybody?
Can you respond to that yes. question? I didn't think we're affecting anything that's been already built.
Correct. We're not. Anything that's pre-existing fence-wise is not impacted by by these changes. If it was previously authorized, it was previously authorized. I would speak to traffic briefly. There's two things. We are still working to obtain approval from the state to install a traffic signal at 40th and 101. That signal would be paid for with Newport Urban Renewal dollars, wouldn't be paid for by the state. We're wrapping up intersection control evaluation on that. And the traffic engineers have indicated that it looks favorable at this point with respect to the warrants, but ODOT hasn't weighed in formally yet, so fingers crossed. I also want to point out that since the inception of Wilder, there was always a recognition that there needed to be an alternative emergency access, and it is in place. We have, the city possesses easements over an existing gravel roadway that extends and would eventually become a public roadway, loops to the south and comes back out at 50th. That's a gravel road. It is a drivable gravel road and it serves as emergency access. And our public works folks are aware of that, our fire department's aware of that, and they're sincerely making sure that that roadway is available should it ever be needed as a secondary way out if for some reason 40th and 101 were shut.
I'd also like to point out that access road is, there's a gate.
There is.
That we've been assured somebody has a key to. Mm-hmm. I, again, would like to point out that things fall apart in emergencies, and relying on somebody who has a key somewhere to unlock a gate miles away from where the key is not an ideal solution. And did I hear you say that with this, existing fences would not be impacted?
Correct. If the existing fence was constructed and authorized, that's not going to be impacted by these changes.
Okay. So again, we need another road.
Okay, thank you.
It's not a very drivable gravel road, by the way. A lot of
trade. Okay. Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Other opposition? Anybody else have any other opposition?
Are you raising your hand? He can't see you.
Yes.
So. Well, come on up. I couldn't see you.
Hi there.
Okay, name and city.
Yes, my name is Julie Ekman. I live at 4555 Fleming Street in Wilder, excuse me. just have an observation to support Councilman Berman's thing about parking, concerns about parking. And this observations I see happening in our neighborhood, and that people do not have room in their garages to park, so they end up parking on the street. So basically, you know, the visitor parking areas along the street have been taken up by residents there. So, and some residents, their vehicles are way too large to park into the garage too. So this is just some observations I saw and have seen around our area.
Sounds to me like an issue you could take up with the Homeowners Association. The president is here tonight.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's just an observation I've seen where people, you know, they have too many vehicles. The driveways themselves are not really long enough or wide enough. If you want to park on your driveway, I sort of have to angle in. And considering putting out this, like, patio pavers on the sides there so we can park in sideways, because the driveway is not long enough to park. I mean, we have a RAV4, so it's not an unreasonable vehicle to have. So this is just one of my, when you mentioned parking, I'm going, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
So could see that happening.
Any other hands? I don't see any. So we can have the applicant rebuttal, although I don't know what there is to rebut, to be honest. Okay.
now closed for public testimony. And the commission can do some deliberation, question, come up with a verbal decision. Mr. Berman.
I think the concept is great. I still have minor concerns about the whole parking issue and enforcement and such, but I'm sure that'll work out through the Homeowners Association. I think you've done a wonderful job here. Obviously, previous times you've been here, you've always presented very detailed, very comprehensive plans, and we appreciate that, and you, I think you've gained a level of respect and trust from the Planning Commission such that we're not going to dig into an awful lot of things down at a very detailed level. The two comments from the previous hearing, one about dark sky, and take that into consideration. And consider, please, at least conduit for electric charging at people's homes would really be a big plus in the long run. So at least the plumbing, if not the actual installation. I have a bit of a focus.
Okay, Braulio?
You know, I've used the golf club at a Wilder and periodically have lunch in the cafe when it's open. It seems like there's a congenial community of people who live there, and we've seen that from the folks who come here to testify tonight. They're going to be creating housing. We all know there's a need for housing. If I interpret her testimony correctly, at least the smaller homes, the narrow lot homes, those will be less expensive than Nyvee's townhouses. And so I have no problems with that. I would hope that whoever makes the motion to approve would incorporate the alternative language on the height of lots 1 through 56, which is something that the applicant suggested that she was happy with.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Derek, the latest staff report does include the new language, right?
I didn't redo the staff report. I gave you an alternative condition G. So if you're okay with the alternative condition G, it'd just be a motion to approve with the staff report conditions with this one modification.
Okay. Right there on the white page there in front of you.
Echo my colleague's statement. Housing, important, great to see, super supportive. I have two concerns. One is mm-hmm. discussed, that dead end into the multi-use path. I've just seen those become problems. In my prior life in San Francisco, we had that a lot. Narrow lots, substandard alleys, and if there's no way out, if you don't have a hammerhead or something, sure would like to see a design alternative that solves that problem better than what we've seen, which is backing into a private driveway. That's one. Fencing in the site visibility triangle, violating that site visibility at any location, that's one that also kind of bothers me. How devastating really is that to the development if that condition is not included in motion? Which corners exactly, help me understand where the SVT would intersect and what lost.
I would see this a couple things. Well, that would apply throughout Wilder, but I would say this, 42 inches, it's not uncommon for jurisdictions to use that in the side triangle areas as well. So it's 30, you know, it's currently 36 under the city's rules. So it's not a major deviation and would still result in fence heights that aren't going to be generally obstructing traffic. So we didn't have a major concern about 42 inches as opposed to 36 in that regard. And you know, they're holding to the 36 at intersections with this collector roadway, which I think is, it's more important. And you have, you know, here you're seeing a whole bunch of, you know, public tracks here, so it's not, you know, you wouldn't see fences there. But on the other side, you do have homes stacked up pretty close to those intersections. And those would be held at 36 inches. Okay. And then the point I'm trying to make, the interior roads, I mean, you're traveling very slow. And a 42-inch, you're going to have adequate visibility from our perspective at those intersections. So that's why we were comfortable with that.
I hear you. I'm also trying to digest the concern that my colleagues have raised about just the on-street parking, emergency access. I mean, it sounds like it could be a little congested, and that can be dangerous if you can't see clearly. So we're basically talking 6 inches of fence height, right?
Yes.
That's basically the variance.
Yeah. That is. And it's...
I'm not hearing a compelling reason whether 6 inches is critical.
That would be for the applicant, not, from our perspective, we didn't see it as an issue that was going to be a problem for the vehicle on the site.
So those are my only two concerns. Beyond that, love the development, would love to see it happen tomorrow.
Eric, I think phase one in Wilder worked really well. I know there's been a few parking issues there, but we're dealing with younger home buyers. It's been quite a bit of time down there. Yes, they show up with big four-wheel drive trucks, and yes, there's going to be some issues, but when we're dealing with that younger demographic, that's just going to happen. But for the most part, it seems like everybody's dealt with it fairly well. I've only seen that an issue in a couple of spots. So. But all in all, it works well. I spend a lot of time down there. We go down and eat. We use the dog park. And I have no reason to think that the next phase will not be just as successful. And I'm all for it. Okay.
Oh, for that, sure. No, you can do that. I don't have anything. I think the fence is a bit of an issue for me, but and that I enjoy privacy. But 6-foot fences are just starting to be unfriendly, aesthetically, that's all. And that's not what we're here to decide. So that's it.
Okay, the only real issue I kind of had, John Updike brought up, and that's kind of the alley down there by 37. It would be nice if we could put in, sort of extend that out, move that walkway there.
The pathway?
What?
Pathway?
Yeah, the pathway.
Uh-huh.
Out a little bit and put in a hammerhead or some type of circle. Because if I'm in those houses, at the end, 35, 36, 37, it's kind of, it's going to be difficult for me to back out, turn around, and go up. Oftentimes, particularly if I'm in a small driveway, and I'm parked at an angle, based on how I kind of come in, if I'm going to park at an angle so I can put my big vehicle, and I drive a truck. And I'm going to be, kind of facing the front of the truck is going to come in at an angle, and the back end is going to be angled up into that walkway. So that means I'm going to have to try to back out. And, there's a lot of people that are not good backer-outers.
Can you modify the proposed conditions?
Yeah, so that, so that we could put in a, John said a hammerhead that would work, or some type of roundabout or type thing. Other than that, I don't really have any, I think what
was done is work well. Eric, you've heard some of the concerns of folks on the commission. Is there a way to incorporate some of the issues raised by my fellow commissioners into the final of court orders.
Yeah. We can you do the staff report.
Yeah, could or we?
Or attach it to the staff report? This,
you know, or the, yeah, the consideration sheet.
You know, both comments were well taken.
If, so we just modify section D, which speaks to the vehicle turn radius diagram. And in lieu of that, some design solution that permits vehicles to exit that dead-end space in an appropriate manner. Would that be sufficient to allow it to go forward and then have a design solution that's subject to administrative approval?
You can absolutely modify conditions. If you'd like to modify the item D condition to indicate that there needs to be an actual turnaround at that location, you can do so. I think I could weave that into the findings, and we can work with the applicant in terms of exactly what that looks like.
Okay, so John, would you like to make the motion?
Sure, give me the one with all the letters and the numbers. I would move for approval of file 1PD24, 2PD24, 1SUB24, 2TIA24. As noted in the staff report, including the alternate condition G, the peak height of any structure of lots 1 through 156 shall not exceed 35 feet, and amending condition D as a dog to allow for a engineering solution to properly address the vehicular circulation necessary at the interface of Alley C and the multi-use path at the director's discretion. Got all that, Sherry?
Yes.
Word for word.
Oh, you got it.
I so move.
Well spoken. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you, everybody. That's fine.
You know, you were talking about access to 35, 36, 37. I was thinking about how about those with the 54, 56.
So we now move into director comments.
Yeah, that's the only thing that we have left. We didn't have any unfinished business. So director's comments. I just want to touch on a few things real quick. I will, for your next meeting, have an updated work program. So I'll be bringing that to you for as part of your work session. I did want to update you in the conversation we had with the City Council regarding the FEMA requirements, the EIS implementation. Council had a chance to absorb and is continuing to absorb kind of where we are at and other jurisdictions are at in the state of Oregon. Our plan at this point is to take action at the basically second meeting in November with the council. And this is one of those where it makes sense to wait a little bit and see how some of these things filter out. We've had letters from the congressional delegation asking for additional time, from the governor asking for additional time, and
any federal response?
Not that I've heard yet. And I'm staying plugged in with the league on this, and so the league, it's almost like a weekly conference call with the League of Oregon Cities and others that are collaborating on this. And so, our plan is to bring it back for action to the council at that second meeting in November, and maybe circumstances have changed slightly by then, or we can get a little bit more clarity in terms of exactly what we need to do. So stay tuned on that. But I think it was a fruitful discussion with council.
Okay.
excuse me. Council also approved the estuary amendments that you recommended. So that ordinance has been adopted and will be effective in 30 days. So that whole package went through as well. So that's all I have.
How's the comp plan reformatted?
Oh, thank you. Beth's continuing to work on that. She's maybe halfway there. She wasn't quite where she wanted to be or we felt comfortable presenting at this point. So we'll get that rescheduled at a later date.
It's just a general question, quickie. We always bring up dark sky approach, downlighting. Is there a simple code provision that we can add to ensure that that is addressed in every development? Is there a missing link there? Do we? It's like we know we want it in everything we see. So why doesn't the code say that? Or does it?
There's ways to get there on projects. I think dark sky compliance is something that our council's been working towards too. And one of the challenges is we've got a whole lot of street lighting that's not dark sky compliant. And it's hard to put in place requirements on private property owners when you have the entire public right of way that's, you know, big chunks of it are broadcasting directly up in the sky. So I think the effort's been to try to work with Central Lincoln PUD to address that issue. And if we can address the street lighting, particularly the acorn ornamentals that you know, broadcast up, then we'd be in a position to turn around and ask those private property owners to also be dark sky compliant.
The lack of funds, the lack of resources, or both?
Because there will be both.
That's more a question for the fine lady sitting in the front.
Yeah. You know, there has been an effort made to work with PUD on coming up. There's a shield that I understand that they have, that PUD is comfortable with, that they can mount on the acorn lights, but that's as far as the conversation's gone that I'm aware of.
Got it. Thank you.
Could incorporate that in the upcoming budget meeting next month.
Yes, we shall.
Okay. The meeting is adjourned. Chairman, 8:57.
Bedford.